WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. And we are in Manchester, New Hampshire today for the nation's first full primary voting in the 2016 presidential primary campaign. The center of Manchester is swamped with candidates and signs and press and buses. For a few more hours, you can be cheek by jowl here with the contenders themselves. And we have been. It's a cold, crunchy, snowy day, and the voters are out. New Hampshire doesn't decide the race, but it can decide a lot. This hour on Point, we are in New Hampshire for primary day. You can join us on air or online. What do you hope comes out of this day's voting? How do you want to see the field winnowed or turned upside down? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Reporters all over the place, NPR's Elsa Chang in New Hampshire, talking with Brenda Morato of Brentwood, New Hampshire, who explained Bernie Sanders' support from voters in New Hampshire.
I think for the first time, the Democratic Party is tapping into what I would call the working class or blue collar vote. Traditionally, that's been their vote, but they moved away from it and they lost it for a while. But I think Bernie is resonating with them again.
And we've been out there as well in the cold and snow and crowds last night. A big Trump rally at the arena just across the way from us here. I talked with Trump supporter Marissa about why he was her candidate.
I feel like if anyone's going to change America, it's going to be Trump.
What is it about him? Why does he make you feel that?
He's a go-getter. He knows what he wants, and he doesn't care what other people want to say about it.
He's a go-getter. We've been out with voters and candidates in the sweating and the cheering and the teeth chattering and the quiet conversations. Now we're camped out in a studio high above a snow-covered city where it's all about the vote. We're here with a great roundtable. Lisa Lehrer joins us, national political reporter for the Associated Press. Lisa, it's great to have you right here with us in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Thanks for having me.
Andy Smith is here, professor of political science at the University of New Hampshire, director of their Survey Center, author of The First Primary, New Hampshire's Outsized Role in Presidential Politics. No one's going to argue that today. Andy Smith, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having me.
And from the heart of New Hampshire, no less than our own On Point news analyst, Jack Beattie. Jack's been out on the campaign trail for a special On Point primary newsletter. You can read and subscribe to Jack's Notes from New Hampshire at our website, onpointradio.org. But he's no .org. He's right here in the flesh. It's great to have you, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Andy, and Lisa.
Made his way across New Hampshire just today, and here we are. Lisa, let me come to you first. What is going to be decided here? It's not the end. It's still kind of the beginning, but things will be leveraged today. Where are the real points of leverage on the Democratic side, on the Republican side today?
Well, so one thing we're all going to be watching closely is not whether Bernie Sanders wins, but how much Bernie Sanders wins by. If this is a blowout, that's really bad for Hillary Clinton. If it's tighter, if she loses by 8 points, which feels kind of like a blowout in a normal primary.
Yes.
But in this case, that would be something she could spin not quite into a win, but not so much of a devastating loss. You know, the saying here is that Iowa picks corn. This is something I suspect this panel may agree with. And New Hampshire picks presidents.
Oh, boy. All of Iowa was saying, oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Iowa. But that may not totally be the case here tonight because Hillary Clinton still is favored to eventually win the nomination. The question is how long and how bumpy a path this is for her. On the Republican side, we're looking for a similar thing with Trump. He is heavily favored to win. The question is by how much. We don't really have a sense for how big his coalition actually truly is once people head to the polls. So that's something that we're going to be watching for on the Republican side, along with how well Marco Rubio does. Is he able to knock out those other establishment guys or not? So it's not so much about who's going to win necessarily, although that's very important. It's about how much and what those margins look like and who's voting for them.
Andy Smith, who could be cut out today? Who could be pushed up?
Well, I think on the Democratic side, the easy answer is that both of them are going on. Mm-hmm. On the Republican side, it's probably too early to say which one of them or two of them will drop out because we've got people that could finish very easily between second and sixth place, or maybe even seventh place, as Carly Fiorina.
That's pretty
seems
wide
to
open once you get into that
here.
Rank.
But of those more mainstream Republicans of Rubio, Kasich, Bush, and Christie, one, if not two of those people, I think will be pushed out after this. Christie doesn't have much money left, and that's usually what happens. You starve and you go home. Bush still has plenty of money. Cruz, on his, who's a different sort of animal, has his money, and he'll go forward. But the other folks, I think there's going to be intense pressure on the two or three that don't do well. But if nobody separates themselves from the pack, then, you know, there's no reason for them to drop out except for money.
Jack, you've been all over the state in recent days. Here we are, snowy Manchester all around us, and the voting going on north, south, east, west in this state right now. Who's caught your eye? Where are you looking for tells as to who can go forward effectively and who might not after New Hampshire?
Well, I'm trying to connect the candidates I've seen and the town halls I've attended with what seems to be the grim distinction of New Hampshire. It leads the nation in deaths from overdose of opioids.
Everybody talks about it. It's a wide open issue this year.
And it is the number one concern of New Hampshire citizens, according to the poll in the Financial Times. They go so far as to say there is barely a citizen who has been unaffected by this tragedy. And in some ways, it's an apolitical tragedy. It reminds me of Dr. Johnson's line, how small of all that human hearts endure that part which kings or laws can cause or cure. There doesn't seem to be something that and lends itself to, you know, a 10-point program, and yet it has come up again and again. The candidates have had to go into their autobiographies. They've had to bring out lachrymose tales about tragedies they have suffered. And the sense I have from questioners is just a feeling of being of great puzzlement. This is a state which is with a $71,000 median income, as opposed to West Virginia, which is its only rival in deaths with $39,000. And yet, this curse keeps going, and no one seems to have an answer.
Andy Smith, you're a New Hampshire guy front to back here. What is that about? Why is that? Is it economic? People just feel hopeless?
No, it actually isn't. I think there's several reasons it may have been the case. One of them is that we had a large increase in the prescription opioids during the over the last 10 years or so. And a lot of these folks are construction workers, so forth, who were able to get that. After that went away, you saw the increase. We saw a big rise in crimes to steal those sorts of things.
Yeah.
That's been largely eliminated. But cheap heroin and now fentanyl have come in to provide that. And so it's like people got hooked by prescription drugs that they had a real prescription for. The prescription ends, and they were now relying on these other drugs. And they're coming right up from Massachusetts, right up the interstates.
We were out with Ted Cruz yesterday, people asking him about this right here in New Hampshire. You know, kind of a very hot, crowded place. Lots of visitors from all over the country coming to get close to these candidates. Bar at the back, pretty raucous. Up front, almost a prayer meeting with Ted Cruz. And in the middle of that comes the question about opioids. And, of course, he brings up his sister and her troubles there. Candidates getting very personal on this front. That channel of drugs up from Mexico at the big Donald Trump arena fest last night. He's saying the wall, the wall, the wall. And one of the first reasons he gives is stop those drugs from coming in. We're in New Hampshire. We're in the middle of primary day here. My colleague at WBUR in Boston, Anthony Brooks, is out in the field. He's been watching what's going on with voters and more. Anthony Brooks, are you there? Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here, Tom. I'm right here. Yeah, I'm at Manchester Memorial High School, which is where folks from Ward 8 are voting. Tom, it's a beautiful day. The sun is breaking through. You described it as cold and crunchy. That's what's happening here with the sun breaking through the clouds. Steady stream of voters coming out of this high school. And here's the official count just from the last 30 minutes or so. I talked to 12 voters. What I should say as well that this is a ward that voted Republican for Scott Brown over Democratic Senator Gene Shaheen in 2014. So it tends Republican. Five votes for Trump, one vote for John Kasich, one for Chris Christie. On the Democratic side, four for Bernie Sanders, one for Hillary Clinton. So that's a unofficial
right.
sampling.
There you get a very, very, very
voters.
Super informal poll. Anthony, you've been covering this race for weeks and weeks and more now. What's your sense of where this has come to? What are you really watching for today as you're out in the field in New Hampshire, on the ground, watching the vote finally come together?
Well, I think one of your guests really put her finger on it. I mean, I'm really interested to see how, I mean, I expect Donald Trump to win, but by how much is he going to win? Are those polls going to translate to real votes on the ground? They didn't happen in Iowa. He talked about, we talked about not a great ground game in Iowa for Donald Trump. He said he was going to do better here in New Hampshire. So the big, big question is, has he gotten his ground game together? Will those voters come out? And how big is his victory, his expected victory, going to be? And on the Democratic side, I think it's been a fascinating contest as well for the real heart and soul of the Democratic Party, you could say. And I agree with your guest. I mean, how big is this expected Bernie Sanders victory going to be? And to what extent will Hillary Clinton be able to spin it as, you know, a comeback for her, much like Bill Clinton did many years ago, back in 1992?
Anthony Brooks with WBUR, my colleague there, and out with a very, very early, very, very, very informal poll of voting in New Hampshire. Anthony, thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Lisa, is there a profile here on the GOP side? Who's voting for Trump or following him? Who's going elsewhere? Is there a type? Is there an outlook on the world that you associate with Trump supporters or others?
Well, I think Trump supporters are generally independent. They're not necessarily, you know, mainstream Republicans. So that was the question in Iowa. His support in Iowa was overwhelmingly people who haven't caucused before, and the caucuses are a pretty complicated process. So it's a question about whether these people actually head to the polls. Are these people who actually cast their ballots, or is going to a Trump rally, they're sort of like what he's saying, but, you know, they don't really vote, or, you know, he's drawing crowds because these are people who want to see. It's a great show. He puts on a great show, oh, and people want to see what happens, you know. So I think that's the big question here. Does he turn out, does he translate these big rallies, what looks like to support, into actual support? And New Hampshire is a little different, right? And one of the great things about New Hampshire, and I love the process in New Hampshire, not just because I'm a New Englander, but because they have to answer questions. They really have to take
all
kinds of questions in these town hall meetings and show, you know, can they deal with all the issues and all the emotion that you have to deal with as president?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are coming to you from Manchester, New Hampshire today. The first in the nation, primary voting. Full primary voting is underway right now. Candidates crisscrossing this state for weeks and weeks, months and months. Everybody wants a win, or at least the best performance they can turn in today. Trump and Sanders leading in the polls, but exactly how it turns out matters a lot for energy, momentum going forward out of Iowa. You can join us today, New Hampshire voters. Who's won your vote and why? What will New Hampshire settle? What won't it settle in this race? And listeners across the country, what do you want to know from the people who have spent months with these candidates? Up close. We were out with all kinds of candidates and voters yesterday from New Hampshire and around the country. I was talking with Dennis Williams from Manchester, New Hampshire. He said he and his wife, for them, it was a toss-up between Trump and Ted Cruz. But on Sunday, they decided to go for Cruz. He said he's a Christian, like us, Williams said, and unlike Trump, they said Cruz has the negotiating skills to work with people who don't like him.
Cruz has a lot of people who don't like him, but I think he's got the right stuff to make things happen.
What about, you know, on Capitol Hill, there's a lot of other senators who talk smack about who don't like Ted Cruz.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, John McCain called him a wacko bird.
That's refreshing.
Well, okay, so that's what I'm curious
about.
That's
refreshing. So that's what we want to hear.
He can work with them, but he's not afraid to cross swords.
He's going to cross swords with them, and I hope he does. It's time.
I'm not sure that's really about negotiating. It's about crossing swords when it comes to Cruz for that voter right there. I mean, Andy, how do you see people breaking down? Who's going to Trump? Who's going to Cruz? Who's going to Rubio? Kasich has got a much stronger profile in New Hampshire than he had in Iowa.
Well, first off, New Hampshire is different than Iowa. We don't have the religious voters and the evangelical voters that you see there. It's a non-religious state by and large. And what we're seeing that I think that's fascinating about Trump is that his support is the broadest of any of the Republican candidates. It's really across the board. And when you start to look for what it is that's different about him, we can all kind of feel this. And I think here's a couple hints. First of all, among people who regularly listen to conservative talk radio, he's getting 42% of the support of that group, 28% for Cruz. And then the second group that's interesting, among people who never attend church services, he's getting 38% of that group. These are the non-traditional, non-religious, sectarian Republicans that largely don't exist in a state like Iowa.
And Jack, what about on the Democratic side? You've been talking to people all over the place. Who breaks for Sanders? Who breaks for Hillary Clinton?
Well, here I'm going to just channel Andy. You gave me a briefing looking at his numbers. It is clear that Bernie has young voters, people who've recently moved into the state, and you have to move up the age gradient till you find the Hillary base. Probably over 65. That would be, wouldn't that be dramatically pro-Clinton, Andy? Yeah. And so it's a, and I guess the contest here is reliably, we senior citizens vote, but, and will the young folks show up? Now I watched Bernie's interminable speech yesterday on C-SPAN, and you wonder that anybody could had maintained sentience after leaving the auditorium. But the people were fired up. The young people were fired up. They love it. What felt like, you know, endless to me was sweet music to them. So, yeah, there's an age issue here, and I think that's the key difference.
We got callers from around the country. Kyle in Nashville. Kyle, thanks for calling. You're on the air in Manchester, New Hampshire.
Hi, Tom. As a younger voter, I guess I'm 33. Identify with Bernie. I guess I'm in that demographic. I'm actually a veteran, and so a lot of the social safety net programs kind of resonate with me. And, you know, New Hampshire, I think we're, you know, at least my wife and I are looking for a more decisive gap. I feel like Hillary was able to kind of tout the smaller margins there, and we definitely do feel like it was a moral victory for Sanders, but would love to see that gap widen, and I'm hoping that kind of comes out of New Hampshire for sure.
Does your support depend on that, Kyle? You're sympathetic to Sanders. It sounds like you'd be ready to support him, but I hear you saying you want a big win in New Hampshire to prove that he's got the stuff.
You know, my support doesn't depend on it, but of course, you know, you have to face the eventuality with all of us guys. Like, what happens when all of us who are supporting Sanders, if that campaign doesn't follow through, we're kind of left with the person that we were critiquing all along. And so I'm really hoping that, you know, that boost kind of comes out of New Hampshire and kind of swings that campaign forward. But, you know, my support is basically on the social policies. I think these are items that make sense for us. And, you know, with my generation, we've been through, you know, our career years have been through the recession, through the wars.
Yeah.
A lot of us fought in these wars. And so we're looking for just something new and fresh to kind of help us out.
Kyle, I really appreciate your call. Boy, is that interesting, Lisa. I mean, there's support for Sanders, but also kind of nerves in Nashville. If my wife and I throw our lot with this guy, can he go the distance? And if we're pounding on Hillary, is not the one, but he can't do it, then where does that leave Kyle in Nashville? What about that tension?
Well, certainly the Sanders campaign is looking for as big a win as they can get out of here. I mean, let's be honest, Hillary Clinton is probably the best-known politician in the country, if not perhaps in the world. Sanders is less well-known, particularly once you get out of New England, once you get into those southern contests, Nevada and South Carolina, and then those Super Tuesday states that follow. So his team is looking for a big win, a headline-capturing win that will allow him to introduce himself to a broader swath of voters, particularly minority voters. So far, the polling we've seen has shown that group heavily in favor of Hillary Clinton. They make up Latino and African-American voters make up a much larger share of the electorate in places like Nevada, South Carolina. So he's hoping to make inroads with a broader swath of the Democratic Party based on a really big win here.
And, of course, there's this guy still out there at a campaign in Milford, New Hampshire on Sunday. Bill Clinton launched an attack on Bernie Sanders, criticized Sanders' health care plan, which he said Sanders had already disavowed.
But is it good for America? I don't think so. Is it good for New Hampshire? I don't think so. The New Hampshire I knew would not have voted for me if I had done that.
Andy Smith, we're in your state. Is New Hampshire a good indicator of how these two candidates go forward? Kyle in Nashville wants a big win here. But even if he gets a very big win here, right next to Vermont, Bernie Sanders' home states, how big a tell is that for what comes for the Democrats?
First of all, being a neighbor of Vermont really doesn't make much difference here. Massachusetts is the neighbor of New Hampshire for most people. But if he gets a big win in New Hampshire, I think that what it's signifying is that there is a demographic and age-based generational shift in the Democratic Party that the Bill Clinton doesn't recognize, because it is not the New Hampshire that Bill Clinton won in 1992. It is a very different, much more liberal state. The percentage who are identified
when he talks about the New Hampshire I knew, that really was the New Hampshire he knew, past tense.
Absolutely. It's a third of the potential voters this time around weren't here in 2008. And they're much more liberal, 11 percentage points more liberal than the Democratic electorate in 2008. And I think going forward, you're going to see things shift around like they typically do in the subsequent states towards Sanders, should he win big here?
We've got callers from right here in New Hampshire. They're out there voting. They're out there calling on Point. Fred in Derry, New Hampshire, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, but just got home and voted for Bernie.
Why, Fred?
And, he is a refreshing breath of fresh air. More specifically, he is addressing the issues that no one else is, specifically the gentrification of our society, of our middle class, student loans, one-payer insurance, inadequacy of pay. That's why he hasn't gotten the reporting as much as he deserves it. If Hillary wins the overall primaries, I would vote for her. I don't want to do the darn it, I hate this. That's why I was just writing down what I wanted to say.
It's okay. It's okay.
Consumer advocate Nader.
Ruff Nader. Yeah. You don't want to do it. Don't do a Nader.
No, I won't. And lastly, when security experts say, if you see something, say something. And what I'm seeing is too many of my neighbors voting for a man who is fascist and Trump. And so please, people, vote against this man.
Vote against Trump. Vote for Bernie. The word from Fred in Derry, New Hampshire. What do you hear in that, Andy? What does Fred represent?
Well, I don't know how old he is, but I think the age difference is significant. And among men who are going to vote in the Democratic primary, they're going overwhelmingly for Sanders. That is, I think, a fascinating thing. So 72% of men in our most recent poll said they would vote for Sanders. You know, that's 53% of women. But so the gender gap is definitely there, but it favors Sanders, and it's among men. Democratic men have gotten much, much more liberal as the percentage of the Democratic Party that are women increases. So it's like the men that are left are really just those liberal men.
Of course, the women supporters are out there. Hillary Clinton's field office in Salem, New Hampshire over the weekend. This is Kay Galloway talking with The Guardian about why she's supporting Hillary Clinton.
I just think she's much more well-known and it is seen as far more capable than people were aware of before. I think that, you know, to run the State Department, to travel and to make an impact diplomatically just added to her charisma. It is long overdue that we have a female president here in the United States.
Jack, you've been out listening a lot. You wrote one of your notes from New Hampshire pieces at onpointradio.org. You, listeners, you can subscribe for it. But you had a conversation between a kind of a hypothetical Bill and Betty about these two candidates, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, I guess a husband and wife sort of talking this through. Give us a sense of the tension in that dialectic.
Well, it all comes down, I think, to electability. There is a great deal of partiality for Bernie. That does skew it. But I think in the final analysis, this is the proposition that Hillary's been advancing, electability. And you know, there is this new phenomenon, you'll be familiar with it in politics, negative partisanship. People are like their own party, but really they dislike the other party more. And the negative partisan wants one question answered: who can beat the other party? And that's what's going back and forth on the Democratic side. The Hillary people are saying more people would vote for a Muslim than for a socialist, and the Bernie people are saying you have more baggage than TWA, and you know you're yesterday's candidate and yesterday's assumptions about politics, and you know when they start bringing out the scandals and the and it back and forth it goes, but the crucial thing is who can beat the other guy.
In the GOP, too. The Rubio ad that runs endlessly here in New Hampshire is all about, I can beat Hillary Clinton. Think about it. Jim in Cleveland, Ohio. Jim, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. My question is how is the whole Gloria Steinem, Madeleine Albright thing playing out? That's A. And then B, I saw an article in the New York Times about Clinton or Bill Clinton giving a speech in New Hampshire, and I was struck by this idea that he all of a sudden is wearing plaid shirts and you know, I just think I can't believe that Clinton doesn't know when to exit stage left, and I'm wondering how New Hampshire is receiving him, because it sounds like he's speaking to some pretty closed or small crowd. So how is Steinem and Albright playing out, and is Bill Clinton still resonating?
You don't see Paul Bunyan there out of the offices in New York. Go first to Madeleine Albright's been up. Gloria Steinem, this is all in the news about them standing up for Hillary. How about it, Lisa?
Well, the caller hit it on the head. That is one of the biggest things I'm going to be watching out of these results is where women end up. I mean, certainly Hillary Clinton and her surrogates, people who are supporting her, have really doubled down, gone all in on this idea that you should vote for Hillary Clinton because she will be the first woman president. And it's almost like a guilt trip that they're waging on women voters. Madeleine Albright, I was in an event earlier this past week where she said there's a special place in hell for women who don't support Hillary Clinton. Could see that, right. I could see that backfiring, particularly among younger female voters. I had a number of younger female voters who told me in interviews, of course I want a woman president. I believe there will be a woman president, but not this woman. So that's a common sentiment that you're hearing, not only in this state, but across the country. So they really, and actually when you look at studies have been done on how best to communicate this message, and they found that language like, you know, vote for this woman because she would be the first woman president actually backfires, and language like there has never been a woman president does much better. It tends to have better results with voters. So this is a very delicate message and one that has not been delivered very delicately here in New Hampshire.
A special place in hell.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. And of course, like the gender, the engendered environment in which people like Madeleine Albright came up in is very different than the one in which some of these younger Bernie supporters came up in. So it's a different worldview. So that's a really interesting thing. And I think a lot of people, myself included, and probably everyone at this table, will be looking to see what happens with women voters. On Bill Clinton, one thing very quickly, I think it's a fascinating thing, not only because he's, you know, 4 years older than he was last time we saw him in 2012, but he's still a very popular figure in the Democratic Party. What's become less popular is a lot of the things he did. The crime bill, yeah. NAFTA, Glass-Steagall, some of the stuff on gay marriage, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Those were all Bill Clinton administration achievements that have become totally rebuked by many liberal voters in the Democratic Party. So it's a fascinating dichotomy when you talk to voters. They say, oh, you know, we love Bill Clinton. You say, okay, well, did you like these things that he did? No, we want the party to go in a very different direction. This is a party that has grown more left-wing during the Obama era. And what we're seeing now is really a fight for the direction heading into the future.
Well, of course, those candidates would say, look, some of the things he did just did not prove out. They didn't work. It's not just Andy Smith, who just got you for another minute here. Give us your big take on what you're going to be watching as the votes roll in tonight out of New Hampshire. Where's the keenest focus you'll bring to it?
I'm looking at turnout, and I want to look at, on the Democratic side, what happens in Manchester. The votes come in early from Manchester. Clinton has to win that, and she has to win that fairly comfortably. Like
Urban 50, Center.
55%. It's the last bastion of lots of more conservative Democrats in the state. If she doesn't win that Manchester, she has no chance of winning the state. On the Republican side, it's all over the map, and I'm just going to sit back and watch the thing come in, because I would not be surprised by really anything that might happen today.
Anything. Jeb Bush?
That might surprise me.
I mean, we're going to hear in just a minute from Byron York with the Washington Examiner. He's following that race very closely as well. But you're saying we could have a surprise winner?
I would suspect that Trump wins. But below that, it's Bush and Kasich have best organizations in the state. But organization doesn't always give you enough to pull you through. So it's just really, this is one that I can't figure out. And I think I've talked with people from all the different campaigns, and they're all telling me the same thing, that they have no idea where it's going to go.
Wow. Okay. Right up there in the air. Andy Smith, professor of political science, University of New Hampshire, director of the University of New Hampshire Survey Center, author of The First Primary, New Hampshire's Outsized Role in Presidential Politics. There is no doubt about that today. It's great to be with you right here in Manchester. Andy Smith, thanks so much for joining us.
For
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are in Manchester, New Hampshire today for the first in the nation full presidential primary vote of the 2016 campaign. Iowa has its caucuses. New Hampshire votes today. And you can feel the crackle in the air and the cold. Voters out a lot on the line for a lot of candidates. We've been out with Cruz and out with Trump, out with Marco Rubio last night, tried to talk with him. Marco Rubio just kept walking and smiling, a kind of political trick that I had not quite seen before. He got called on that kind of Mr. Roboto routine in the big debate on Saturday night. Harsh criticism from New Jersey Governor Chris Christie right here in Manchester, New Hampshire. It was moderated by ABC. Christie called out Rubio for using the same stump speech language several times through the debate.
Here's the bottom line. This notion that Barack Obama doesn't know what he's doing is just not
true.
There
it is.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
There it is, the memorized 25-second speech.
Well, that's the reason why this campaign is so important.
Boy, punching hard there. Drama on that stage. More drama. Donald Trump drew boos from the audience at that debate. Here he is trying to quiet Jeb Bush, who was challenging Trump on the issue of eminent domain.
Let me just, you know, he wants to be a tough guy. A lot of times, you'll have, and it doesn't work very well with
how tough is it to take property from an elderly woman?
Let me talk quiet.
How tough is it?
A lot of times, that's all of his donors and special interests out there.
The Trumpmeister putting his finger to his lips to shush Governor Jeb Bush, and the crowd in the hall not liking it one bit there. Of course, sometimes it's much simpler than that. We were out just last night, big arena just across the street here at a big Trump rally, talked with Brendan Joyce in Manchester, New Hampshire about why he's for Donald Trump.
He wants to build a bigger wall and support us.
Why does a big wall matter to you?
It'll keep out ISIS and all the other people.
People laugh at that idea of the wall, but we heard it from voters again and again last night. They like the wall. When Donald Trump brings up the wall, there's applause in the hall. Lisa Lehrer is with us, national political reporter for the Associated Press, with us right here in Manchester, New Hampshire. Our own Jack Beatty is here. And joining us now, Byron York, chief political correspondent for the Washington Examiner, Fox News contributor, author of The Vast Left-Wing Conspiracy. Byron York, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Every 4 years, at the least, our paths cross in Manchester. Just in New Hampshire, what do you see coming on this day in this state for the GOP, Byron?
Well, looking at the Republican race, I have to say I'm personally chastened by what happened in Iowa. What we saw was Trump underperforming his polls. We saw Marco Rubio overperforming his polls. We saw Ted Cruz overperforming. And when Andy Smith says something like, "This is one I can't figure out," I think we all have to be pretty modest in looking at these polls. On the other hand, Trump has this huge lead. I will say in Iowa, I went to Trump events and I would ask people, have you been contacted by the Trump campaign? Mm-hmm. Any emails, phones, knock on your door, anything? The answer was always no. Here, the answer is yes. They have received contacts from the Trump campaign. The Trump campaign says they're making 40,000 calls a day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's no doubt that they have a better operation here. But still, I think the question on the Republican side is, does Donald Trump perform up to his polls?
Jack, I mean, you've been all around. We heard our New Hampshire public radio analyst today saying Donald Trump may be a problem for the New Hampshire primary reputation, because it's supposed to be the thing where you come, it's up close and personal, you can smell the candidate, you can kick the tires, as they say. I mean, literally, you are elbow to elbow with these guys in many of these settings. But Donald Trump, public radio colleague raising the question of whether he had even spent a single night in New Hampshire.
Yes, I heard that.
Not exactly, you know, Granite State all the way down. It's easy to fly in and out from New York here. How about it?
Yes, you know, he has a new model that hasn't been tried here, the model of sort of celebrity trumping the usual, meet and greet. I mean, the opposite would be John Kasich, 100 town halls, answering, you know, how many thousand questions. And Trump, until very recently, and I don't know how well he's done it, has just simply given the speech and departed. And I take what the reporter was saying, that people are going to be, you know, feeling that maybe this old tradition, if it doesn't produce a nominee, what's the good of it? The point of it, what used to be, or the rationale, mm-hmm. by all this sifting, by all these, you know, publicly, these well-informed citizens asking questions, you get the candidate, the right candidate. Well,
and as the proxy of everybody in the country.
Yes, exactly. But if Trump has a new model just parachuting in with celebrity and from his plane, then, you know, maybe that's all, up for grabs.
We were in the bar with Ted Cruz yesterday, hot as a furnace in there, just jammed. We talked to Don Murphy at a meet and greet there. Trump came and quoted the Bible and talked a lot about his firm conservative stance on the issues. Don Murphy explained why he said he was favoring Cruz over Trump.
I think Cruz is a tested version of Trump. I have a concern about Donald Trump. I really don't know where he stands on anything because he's been on both sides of every issue. Yeah. Ted Cruz, no. I can look at his record and I can tell what he's going to do in the future based on what he's done in the past.
Byron York, how about it? I mean, that was the first full Trump speech that I had attended last night. It's kind of an amazing thing the first time you do it. It's like splatter paint. I mean, yes. I've never seen this rhetorical style before. It's all over the place. It's right off the top of the head, and it goes zooming from very kind of intimate family stuff, and his daughter's up there almost ready to give birth, and his wife's there. And then he's zooming all over the place. I mean, your headline here just recently is, "As vote nears, a more radical Trump emerges." Have you got him framed and understood?
Well, it's not all off the top of the head. It only looks that way. Mm-hmm. And Trump speaks for about an hour and sometimes more
yeah.
every time.
Yeah.
And you'll see people leave at the end. And you'll ask them and they say, because I worked all day, I'm leaving. But still, people do enjoy the show. And
the crowd was loving it.
Exactly.
No question about
that. I think what we've seen, though, Trump is more than just a wall. He does tie mm-hmm. immigration restrictionism with concerns that you normally see on the Democratic side. I saw him in Plymouth a couple of days ago here in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. He was railing against the drug companies, railing against
yes.
the insurance companies,
yes.
Railing against the oil companies. And he was talking about why can't the government negotiate the price of prescription drugs, which is something you hear on the Democratic side all the time. You don't hear it on the Republican side. He is forging a new and different way. It's not just parachuting in. That's a different style. He has a different substance than most of these, all of the other Republican candidates.
Do you welcome it, Byron, as a conservative, or are you like, whoa, where are we going?
Well, there's a division in the conservative world, and the division is, does the Republican Party need to be blown up, or does it not need to be blown up? And I think the people who believe it needs to be blown up are going toward Trump now, because clearly if he were elected president, and a lot of Republicans just cannot get their head around that idea,
mm-hmm.
but if he were, and he did the things he talked about, he would really destroy large parts of the Republican Party as it exists in Washington today.
Lisa Lehrer, you've been all over the place and all over the place here in New Hampshire. Let's go to this side of the ledger. How do you profile the Trump voter versus, take your pick, Cruz, Rubio, Kasich, and right on down the line? Who's coming out for whom here?
Well, I think certainly the Cruz voter, as we saw in Iowa, is a more religious voter. They're drawn much more to that side of the message. I think Trump is getting people who aren't necessarily part of the Republican Party establishment. As Byron said, they want to blow the party up. The other thing that's been fascinating for me with Trump is, you know, it's not, as you pointed out, it's not splatter paint. He is a heat-seeking missile.
But he's hitting buttons every time he goes.
Right. He is a heat-seeking missile for other candidates' biggest weakness. He's able to find mm-hmm. whatever it is that makes them most vulnerable, that drives them crazy. If you're Marco Rubio, maybe that's just how much you sweat. I mean, for a guy from Florida, that's mm-hmm. a sensitive topic.
Yeah, yeah.
And he hones in on it. And it just gets under these people's skin, and it's very effective, and it's a good show. So I think he has some natural political skills that have been really remarkable to watch.
You know, Jack, you've been out. You've been listening. People, you can find plenty of folks who are dismissive, even derisive, of Trump supporters. And yet I was struck by how they are searching for something when we talk to them. That they're just not being offered. Now, if you think that the politics on offer in America are perfect in every dimension, that the status quo is just fine, then okay, you could snort. But people are looking for something here. You can disagree with what they're finding in Donald Trump. You may or may not like it, but they're ready to say, you know what, I don't like the way this game is set up.
Yes, and I think there's just a tremendous distrust of appearances. you know, of the appearances in politics, of the polite expressions, of the rhetoric of politics. I hear again and again people saying, that candidate talks down to me, Trump doesn't. And that, that even though Trump parades his, I went to the Wharton School, I'm smarter than other people, that's not the way he comes across. He comes across as the guy at the bar who says, God blast it, we're going to do something about these immigrants. And I think that does connect with a kind of class resentment that people have of the usual polite, this is what they taught you in school, politics.
But it is more—it's more than style. It's actual substance. You look at the Republican establishment ideas, for example, on immigration, greater levels of immigration, and on entitlements, entitlement cuts. That doesn't make sense to a lot of people. You think, wait a minute, we're going to have more people coming in, and there'll be less stuff for us. And Trump says, no, let's restrict immigration, and we won't touch entitlements. It's much more in line with where a lot of voters are now. It's not, Trump is not just style. He's appealing to something that's wrong inside the Republican Party.
Tom in Bettendorf, Iowa. Tom, we haven't forgotten the caucuses there. Thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a caucus for Jeb Bush last week, and I had a neighbor caucus for Chris Christie, and we kind of both felt that we had split our vote pretty evenly. We were both in kind of the other's camp as well. And a lot of people I know that also voted for Jeb really like John Kasich. I like Kasich a lot, too, but we just didn't think that Kasich was electable on a grand scale. I guess my concern is, as you guys have pointed out, the likelihood that one of those three, either Christie, Bush, or Kasich, will drop out has a lot of us concerned, probably. And I'd like to, I don't know, almost just kind of see it pulled into one solid candidate between those three. It really seems to be that there's a conservative voice that those three all speak to that is lost amidst the other candidates. Rubio, I think Christie did a great job of really identifying Rubio's, weaknesses when he had to debate on Saturday. And really that's a concern I have on the grand scale is that Rubio, while he's a likable person, he doesn't have that, that experience to really speak from.
But I tell you, Tom, he freaked me out last night just with that frozen smile and lack of engagement. I mean, he's got other things on his mind. Nevertheless, I've never quite seen anything like that. One more right here. Thanks for Iowa. Let's go to Illinois right next door. Paul in Bloomington, Illinois. Paul, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. I think I would like to see Kasich come on top of the Republicans because he's the most reasonable candidate they have. Trump and Cruz cannot be elected. In a general election, they would lose and they would damage the Republican Party. Rubio did show his weakness Saturday night, and Christie, while showing his strength, I don't believe he has the temperament to be president. And as far as Bush is concerned, my girlfriend believes that he's receiving some karma for the hanging chads of Florida.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Paul, you've got some major analysis going here, and I love it. Byron, let me bring it to you sort of piece by piece here. We'll come to Kasich. It's interesting. He's kind of nowhere in Iowa. It feels somewhere in New Hampshire. I mean, he's much more present here than he was there. But go to Paul's observation. Number one, Trump and Cruz can't be elected.
Well, you see, we've seen a lot of matchup polls, head-to-head polls with Hillary Clinton, and most of them have shown that Marco Rubio has the best chance against Hillary Clinton. But we've seen polls, and Trump can cite them and Cruz can cite them, in which they beat Hillary Clinton, too. Mm-hmm. And if you go to Republican events, you'll see a number of people who believe that Hillary Clinton will be indicted at some point between now and November, or believe that the scandals of her emails and Benghazi will somehow catch up with her in that time and then make her beatable by anybody. Mm-hmm. So, the electability issue is a real issue with some Republican voters, but there are others who are just not that concerned about it.
Is there a path for Christie, Lisa?
Well, I also think on the electability argument, like this is a very strategic way of voting, and I'm not sure a broad swath of voters really think of it that way.
Though they're being encouraged to now. I mean, Rubio's saying, I can be elected. The implication, they can't.
Right, and as Jack pointed out, Hillary Clinton is making the same case. But I think, you're dealing with a country where there is a deep sense of economic frustration, of physical insecurity. There's worries about terrorism and gun violence on the Democratic side. There's a sense that, the recession is largely ended, but people don't feel better about their economic situation. It's a very emotional, unpredictable
electorate.
And
watch where that goes. The markets of the last few days.
Right, the markets of the last few days. People are feeling very, very nervous. And I think, you know, for a lot of voters on both sides, Democratic and Republican side, they're voting out of that insecurity. They're voting with their heart. They're not necessarily making a calculated decision. Now, some, of course, are. But I think a lot of what's fueling this sort of instability and unpredictability that we're seeing in the electorate is this sense of insecurity.
Jack, what about the call here from Paul in Illinois for the most reasonable candidate? This has not exactly been a season where what we would have traditionally called just reasonable, let's be reasonable, was the clarion call. Yeah. But as the vote gets closer, you can feel some people turn that way. He says, come on, Kasich.
Well, you know, at a Kasich town hall, he comes across precisely that way. Not only reasonable, but thoughtful. He talks about balancing one thing with another. He has the sort of gear reduction that you get from the executive. You know, when you have to decide, you have mm-hmm. to decide. He has a long resume for a relatively, looks like a young man, must be in his 60s, mm-hmm. but he goes way back, you know, with Reagan practically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He knows lots about the military. He knows lots about the economy. He points to Ohio as a kind of model, and above all, and this makes him the Democrats' favorite Republican, he points to the disadvantaged, the people in the shadows. He says our party has to say something to them. And in his state, he went around his own Republican legislature to expand Medicaid under Obamacare because the people in the shadows needed it.
What's your guess, Byron, on the GOP side?
I think you have to look with those four candidates we're talking about, Rubio, Kasich, Cruz, Bush. They're all within 2.5 points of each other here.
Yeah,
they're
tied. Yeah.
You have to look at the ones who can go on. And Rubio can go on. Cruz can go on. Kasich is a one-state candidate. Let's say he won New Hampshire. I mean, he has nothing going down the line. So he would be the guy, you know, the dog that caught the car. He really does not have a campaign in South Carolina and in the SEC states and the states that follow.
Everybody across the country, and certainly here in New Hampshire, will be watching as those results come in tonight. It's been great talking with all of you. Lisa Lehrer with the Associated Press National Political Reporter. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks for having me.
Byron York, Chief Political Correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Thank you, Byron.
Thank you, Tom.
And Jack Beatty, thank you as always.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook in New Hampshire. This is On Point.